Free Lock Podcast number 3. Free Lock Computing. You just got back from Helsinki, Finland.
Open Source Computing. Monty Wadenius is my host. Free Lock
Computing. Monty Wadenius, founder of MySQL. Free Lock Podcast number 3. You just got back from Helsinki, Finland.
What an awesome trip.
It sounded like it was a great trip. So tell me exactly what you did right when you got off the plane.
So I got off the plane and get through customs. Monty Wadenius is my host for this weekend outing. He was generous enough to invite me out there.
Monty Wadenius,
founder.
Founder of MySQL.
Yes. And he knew what plane I was coming in on, but I had had very little communication with him to know how to reach him when I got there, you know, who to call. I didn't even have his phone number.
Had you seen a picture of him?
I'd seen some pictures online of him, but that's about it. So I walk out of customs, and he's sitting there with a MySQL book.
It would have been real funny if he's sitting there holding a MySQL for Dummies book.
Yeah, that would probably be me they're referring to. So he turns out to be quite the foodie. Our first stop in Finland was a grocery store, and he was going to be entertaining some friends for one of the nights I was there. And he really wanted to serve them crab legs because they'd just arrived in Finland not long before, and so I was picking that out. He also did a really nice. Kind of a unique salmon recipe.
Huh.
I'm from Alaska. I've eaten tons of salmon, but he wanted to just try something new while I was there.
Well, what was it? What was the preparation?
He took a king salmon fillet, I mean, big salmon, cut it into slices that were a good solid inch thick all the way around. And he heated up the pan with a really, really hot oil. And just seared the outside of it for about 10 seconds on each side. And that was it. So it was a little bit crusty on the outside, a little bit seared, and sushi on the inside.
Cool.
And just a wonderful flavor.
Did you have a black vodka with the fish?
Yeah, so that was one of the many courses that he served and entertaining. And the first meal, the first night, he pulled out So he asked if I liked vodka, pulled out his vodka, poured it in the shot glass, and it was black. Turns out it's licorice. This is the Finnish flavor. They have a candy called salmiakki that's licorice flavored, and this is salmiakki vodka.
It's kind of like ouzo. I mean, that's what I'm imagining it.
Yeah, except I'd say even a little bit more stronger licorice, and actually black in color instead of the funky stuff.
Well, you've had Jägermeister, right?
Yeah.
Similar?
No, it's. I'd say it's almost sweeter. I kind of always thought of Jägermeister as being more the cough syrup.
So tell me about the saunas. You also mentioned that they were particularly hot saunas.
Yeah, so 110 degrees Celsius.
110 degrees Celsius.
That's about 240 degrees Fahrenheit. That's hotter than temperature of boiling.
Yeah, doesn't sound comfortable to me.
It was great. I loved it. It was awesome. You get in there and you can't sit down. You can't touch anything without putting water down on the bench before you sit down. But you just sit there and it in no time at all, it's taking the winter out of you.
Wow.
It just feels so great. So then we went outside and sat on the swing set. And it wasn't cold at all. There was snow on the ground, rolled around in the snow. You don't even feel the cold. It
doesn't. Your core temperature must have been like 150 by then.
Well, only 10 minutes, so we weren't doing brain damage yet, but probably weren't far off.
Right.
A little bit of insulation there. And got back in for another 10 minutes and we were done. That's the finished sauna.
Sounds pretty good.
Yeah, so it was really a great visit. I got to wander around Helsinki in a blizzard on Saturday. It was really coming down 2 or 3 inches. Kind of made me feel right at home from my Anchorage time. It actually was a beautiful place, and everybody was really friendly, and a really nice trip.
Well, it looks like you've got 2 good interviews going, and maybe we should listen to those.
Yeah, I think it was a great fun talking to him, and I guess we'll talk more at the end of the interview, and you can let me know what you think.
Sure, sounds good. Let's listen.
So I'm here with Michael Monte Wadenius, the original author of MySQL database, who's been kind enough to host me for the weekend. It's been fantastic, and we're talking about the hacking business model. So I guess when you wrote it to me, you had something about hacking business models. Do you see it as a verb or a noun?
In it's actually Zach who come up with the name for that. Uh-huh. So we have just to blame him and ask him for it. I mean, originally the hacking business model was created by me and Zach sitting in Romania and thinking about that, hey, we need to get to create a company right. And for doing that, we need to sit down and define it. Uh-huh. So one beautiful day, he come and visit me, and we sat 2 days and write something based on our experience and entrepreneurs, and also experience of the things that went wrong in MySQL, and try to create something that you would have rules that would ensure that the vision we'd have couldn't be destroyed even if under any circumstances.
Okay.
And for doing that, you need clear rules.
Mm-hmm.
And then Zach went home, published on his blog, and then named it without telling me anything. So, and I think it's a cute name, so we will stick with it.
Okay. I read it the first time and saw the action of hacking business models in it, and that's somewhat what we were trying to do at Freelock. And then it sounds like you started much earlier with the same sort of ideas at MySQL. So how much has that changed over time? How much is your vision of this?
But in MySQL, the original company before MySQL AB, we had some of that. We did have some profit sharing, but it was never finalized. Some of those things were there that we don't force people to work on weekends, but this is not done in detail, and we never come up with a clear way how to see that, how much money should you set on growth, how much for the employees, how you should distribute the employees, and also how should you treat the employees. That was something that was implicit in MySQL, and we thought that this is the self-evident way to do it. For example, we had shared copyright from the start. In MySQL, it was suddenly removed without nobody telling me anything. So a couple of years later, somebody, when I talked about shared copyright, somebody pointed out that we don't have it.
Huh.
And then I went and checked our policies and I noticed that it had been removed, which I found extremely disturbing, because after all, I did create the company with some foundations. Morten joined and promised to follow those. But then things just was destroyed without me knowing. So now in the new company, we have made the rules cleared. We also made it clear that nobody, not even the CEO, can change the rule. The only one who can change is the employees. So, and that should make this sure that this can't happen again.
So how do you make sure that it happens the way you want it? Do you see setting it up as an employee-owned company, or what does the ownership structure look like in your ideal here?
In ideal, you can do both. What I do in mine, just to make it simple, is that I own it, but in the employee contract, we are saying that we are following the hacking business model for the employee, which guarantees that his employment will be followed with that. So that's kind of the, it's basically a promise we make, and we have a written agreement. If I don't follow it, my employees will probably quit, so that will force me to do the right thing.
So that sort of broadens the scope a little bit to one of the reasons I think we're talking is that we'd like to develop some sort of network of businesses and support each other that's trying to have a socially responsible company.
That's kind of an extension to the hacking business model, but and the way I do business. But I think it's a logical follow-up, and I probably need to write it down. And what I'm doing is I'm focusing on one thing, the core of MySQL, and I only want to focus on that. But that also means that I can satisfy all the requirements of my customers. So what I've started to do is find partners in all different areas, and then change customers with them or share them with them, just to be able to satisfy all the customers we need. And still the customer can go come to me or any of the partners and then still get the same setup.
So what do you see as the most important parts of the hacking business model? It's the what you've written down right now seems largely centered around the how to treat employees and what that contract is between the employer and the employee. Is that the heart of it? Is that just talking about the portion you've gotten to so far? Or?
The thing is, what I want to do is the most important. I want to have a company where you get employees that becomes like a family and they will stay together. You have it's based on trust and similar ideas. And when you get employed, I hope that they will stay employed 20 years from now. And to create something that will be stable. That's kind of is the most part. And a company where you work for yourself is more stable than a company where you work for somebody else, if an investor or an owner.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's definitely something that I've thought about a lot in our business, the target market being medium-sized businesses. Most of the ones that I've talked to are older family businesses. They really want to trust the people that they're working with, and it's absolutely critical if you're touching their business systems for them to know that you're going to be around and not just disappear sometime.
And I believe that if you have a company who's based on trust and you show it outside, you also create more trust in the customers that you will do the right thing. Mm-hmm. Because you are totally depending on trust. And that's the biggest difference between open source or company who based the business on open source and closed source. Because in closed source, you are basically hiding behind it. You don't have to share. And your business actually is dependent that you don't share. Well, while in open source, it's totally opposite way. We need to share because we are a service business. We are not a software business.
So you don't think this is possible if you under a proprietary business model?
I mean, it is, but it's a little bit harder. Mm-hmm. I'm sure it can be made. It's just a question about will, but it's easier in the open source world. Because you get the like-minded people, it's easier when you are based on the idea of sharing. Mm-hmm. In successful in big scale, before we don't know if we make it, but at least we were sure that we would get more consulting jobs, not less, by releasing the code.
What do you think were the factors that made it successful as you look back on it?
Pure luck. Yeah. Right product that everybody needed at the right time. I mean, internet was just getting up. Everybody needed a database. There were very few free ones around. And we did it, release it in the right way and to the right audience. And the thing why it worked was that we used it ourselves. So we did know it's stable, because our own business was critical for it. Mm-hmm. And I would say that the thing with a successful product nowadays is, and actually before, is that you have something that other needs, or that depend on.
Okay.
And sometimes people don't know that they need the sixth until you come out with a product. But so what I'm doing, my have done in all my career is solving my own problem and then selling the solution. And as long as other people have the same problems, you're fine.
So what were the biggest challenges you faced in the early days? What were some of the hardest things?
Writing English. Okay. I didn't speak English back then at all. I did read a lot of things in English. But the vocabulary, so I did have the vocabulary, but couldn't pronounce anything. So even if this sounds terrible, it was much worse back then. And I had also done very little writing English, just some short things that you had to do in school. So it was kind of a novel experience to try to communicate with English. And if you look at the old email archives and look at my really, really old emails, they're pretty terrible. At least it's nowadays, even if they are not perfect, they're much better than then.
So did you start it up in English or did you start in Swedish?
We started everything in English when we went public and pushing the product. It's hard to say open source because open source didn't exist when we started.
Right.
You only had free software.
Right. Do you have any thoughts on that split or that difference? That's
I think it's a silly battle.
Uh-huh.
I mean, they are, in some sense, they're trying to solve different things, but if you look at it from the upper layer, how people perceive it, they're solving the same thing.
Yeah. Yeah, that's kind of, we talked about that in previous episode, what the difference is, and I basically had said the same thing, where it was the same thing applied to a different problem.
Yeah. So free software, basically, you want to ensure that the software stays free always. While in open source, they are also trying to make money on it in some ways. Whereas the Free Software Foundation thinks it stops people's freedom.
Mm-hmm.
And I can adhere to both. Mm-hmm. But I mean, I think it's important that you also can get create a business that can survive.
Mm-hmm.
So even if free software would be perfect, not everybody will like it, so you need to break the rules a little bit.
Yeah, well, in that sense, MySQL has always seemed to have more a GPL type of license than a BSD.
Yeah, because for if you are do a license, GPL is absolutely the best license. So that's why we stick with it. We didn't have it before because we need to bootstrap. So first we had a license that basically said that if you use it in commercial environment, then you should pay us a share. And on Windows, we actually just had a license that said that you should pay us for 30 days. If you don't, then you should have a bad conscience. What's the word?
Infringement, the copyright infringement.
No, about them. You should feel bad about it.
Okay.
But we also made it clear that there is no difference in the product if you license or not. And we got a lot of people paying for licenses of their own free will as a way, I believe, to support us. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, the whole bootstrapping of MySQL up to 15 people was basically made of people doing donations through the license.
That's I think, quite an amazing story to hear how well that grew. You were telling me the other day that some people just paid that you'd never heard of before, or they thought they had to. And
mm-hmm. We had basically we have one web page where you could go in and register your license, and then they also said that, hey, you need to fax your credit card. So I got credit card faxes every day without doing anything. Mm-hmm. We did actually send out the license paper to every single one with the number and the printed name and everything else. So they did get something for it.
Mm-hmm.
Some people find that very nice and even treasure it today.
That's neat. Yeah, I know MySQL got quite a bit of flack in some of the early days for the dual license approach.
Mm-hmm.
Anything from your perspective unexpected, or
we got what, slack or
flack? Complaints from some of the free software people.
I never actually saw any notable complaints.
Uh-huh.
We got more when we were at a stage and talking about it, people just thought it was ingenious that you could actually play it that way. And we actually had checked with the Free Software Foundation that it was a sound and right thing to do. Not really what they wanted, because they wanted to spread the free software. But they did see our point that for those who are free, we are free. And those who doesn't want to be free, we are either getting them to be free, or they have to pay for not being free. Mm-hmm. Which is, in some sense, in their mind, is maybe even correct.
Well, you could definitely argue that because of that dual license approach, your free software spread a lot further than it could have
yes,
without it.
Definitely. If we only would have been free, we would have much harder to getting any money. We maybe could have grown, but we never could have gone up to 450 people as we are at the end. So, I mean, just because some people that actually had the money couldn't use us. So it's critical when you do a license scheme that you own all the copyrights so you can do it. And so it's people who are only GPL and not, they will have just a hard time spread their product because some people can't use them.
Mm-hmm. So with the shared copyright that you're sharing with the employees, does that limit your flexibility then going forward? Or
not at all. It just makes it, it easier because it creates better software because people will care more about their right. And I mean, the company still owns everything. So we are the only one who can do shared copyright, do a license on the whole.
Mm-hmm.
An employee can have his own module, he can do whatever he wants, he can sell it, that's okay.
Uh-huh.
As long as that's what the company needs him to do
uh-huh.
for the whole.
Okay. So how did things change after you've gotten funded with MySQL?
For the first 3-4 years was good, things just grow. And then in 2004 around, we got people in the management positions who didn't know about open source and didn't understand the open source business model that is around open source. So they come in with their old closed source mentality, and the only way that they could think of making money was making the product more closed. And then we started to talk about differentiation and everything else. And fine with differentiation, you need to have something different for paid and non-paid. But in my word, that's not software. That's additional services on top.
Mm-hmm.
That's what we did always in the beginning. But they were also trying to do closed source modules, which I was able to defend. But we had different release dates, different ways to get access to the code. A lot of things that was just stupid that actually hindered our growth.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think we would have been much bigger and much more successful if we wouldn't have a differentiation on the source code in any way.
Okay.
And that's what I want to show in a new company that will never happen.
Do you think that you could have taken the same path that you did before and come up with a different result? Is the funded model compatible with the hacking business model?
Investors. So the hacking business model is not say a company who you will go up and put it on the market or get investment for, because we are working for the employers. And that means that an investor wouldn't like to come in and put money because he will not get any money out.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, we can get big, we can get profitable, but the money will not go to an investor.
Mm-hmm.
So we need to basically do a little bit of more organic growth than this rapid growth that investors wants to have. But I mean, I would just say that most of the business that are around, if you look at all the companies, most of those are just solid small companies who are doing great things for their clients. Not everybody wants to grow and be enormously big. And in my company, we want to grow to about around 30 people and basically have a close connections between people,
mm-hmm.
creating a home for us.
Yeah, so why do you think there's so much attention on the funded business model? At least when I'm out in business circles, that's the assumption, is that you're going to go for a venture-backed funding, or at least to start with an angel round and everything else.
But it's for those who really, those entrepreneurs who want to be really rich, they're looking for the big money. Mm-hmm. And I mean, which is good that somebody's looking for that. But I mean, somebody also needs to take care of the employees. And otherwise, you will just get the world where your people just chase the money, and the money goes to very few in the company. And then when, because you do short side the business, the company will go bust, and then you start another one. And just employees have to move from one place to another one. There's always a risk. You don't get something really stable. I want to create, in this case, something really stable. Because, and one of the reasons, the older they have the money, I don't need to chase for the golden pot.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so now we're short on time today, but maybe we can wrap up with a little bit about your current business and what sort of, who your customers are and what sort of business is that you're looking for.
So currently I'm working on a community-developed version of MySQL, because the MySQL AB and no Sun hasn't been able to work closely with the community. And we have been doing that wrong for 4 or 5 years. And I haven't, within the company, been able to correct it, because people have just been chasing the money and not caring about the product as they have should. So I'm fixing that by going out from Sun, gathering the people who are working on MySQL, and engage them to work with me and work on one product, and at the same time keep good connection with Sun, and just ensure that the product actually survives. Because now we have several forks on MySQL outside of Sun, and we also have things that are different, like Drizzle, going their own way and actually getting a really good community around them. But that actually is the developers that we would need on MySQL. And if everything just splits into different directions, in that case, the other databases will win in the end, because they have one track, they know where they're going. So what I'm doing is gathering everything into one track and try and getting that, and then working with Sun so that together we have a working product and a community.
So most of your effort right now is building the team and establishing the product.
Yes, and also creating a network of partners so that we can better serve our customers, because I want to do the core development of the server, which is really the hard thing to do, and you need the right people to do that. And I have that. So getting an infrastructure of lots of companies around, it is also a major point of what I'm doing now. And so now I'm in bootstrapping mood, getting everything in place, getting the bills in place and the machines and the website and everything else. And that the first stage is done, and now we are going to start to do the part of the development part. We have done some of it, but now we are increasingly doing that. And after 1 month or 2 months, we will concentrate on showing to our potential customers who we are, what we can do, and going for the business part.
Okay, so is there anything else you wanted to talk about here?
The one thing is that now when I'm free from the chains of MySQL and Sun, and actually have a possibility to do more by having lots of free time, so to speak. So that in effect, I have starting 4 different companies, where Monte Program AB is one, at least 4. Then also starting my investment company, Open Ocean Capital, where we do investments in lots of different firms, where as we want to bring forward as they have a potential, and in the end we are sitting in the either in the board or in some advisory board, and helping them driving them forward. And some we actually take an active role also. So I'm sitting in 2 boards of owned companies. I started Ostern Marknad, which means buyer's market, where we are going to help collectors and people who have need to find hard to find things, like a motor in some old car or some antiques. You have a glass that you got from your grandmother, and somebody breaks it, and you need to find the exact replica, or actually the same thing. Mm. And it's all, there's no way you can find it without spending days on it. And we want to provide service for doing that, and we have a great idea to do that. And that will evolve within the next few weeks. Hmm. Then I'm also in plan of starting a restaurant.
So you're keeping yourself busy in your little retirement here.
Retirement isn't not the word.
No.
Just trying to do all the things that I haven't had the chance to do. Mm-hmm. And that's really, really fun.
You've already made one investment, two investments?
Four.
Four investments already? Okay. And what sorts of companies are you most interested in helping with?
Basically something where I can use my area of expertise. I do know a little bit about technology, a little bit about databases, and also about growing communities. Mm-hmm. So we are a team of three, where I stand for the community and the technical part. We have then Ralph Valsten, who is a longtime friend, met him in college in 81, and he is a business consultant. He knows a lot about understanding what makes a business work and not. We also already met him yesterday. And then we have Patrick Backman, who was working several years with me on my SQL, doing management and helping driving the company. And he is the CEO of my investment company. So we are the three who have different skills that we can bring to the table, mm-hmm, for the companies. And so far, the companies we are invested in are really happy with us getting us on board. Mm-hmm. So we usually go on board with another investment company, just because we don't want to put in too much, mm-hmm, in each company.
And so I read about the Web of Trust being one of the companies.
Yeah, that's interesting one, yeah.
Uh-huh. And what are the other ones that are?
We have Etemil, who does a rich web client where you can do much more than you can do with traditional web development. When easy way to explain is maybe that you are the difference between a normal web application and a GUI application and executable. So you can come much closer to the executable one. Hmm. And then we have Finsor, who does a small electrical component is very sensitive to pressure. It's so sensitive that if you take a flashlight, it can actually feel the photons jumping on it.
No kidding.
Yeah. So what they are doing is they are doing this little hardware piece, and you can put it under a chair, or you can have a truck going over it, and you can feel the heart of somebody sitting in the truck or somebody sitting in the chair. And currently they're using it for hospital beds, so when you're lying in the hospital now for one of those beds, you don't need anything attached to you. You can get all the sensoring about your heart and
wow,
if you're sleeping and how deep you're sleeping by just examining the pressure.
That sounds really, really wild. I love hearing about the new technologies that people are coming up with.
And then we have also Moipal, who does a little virtual kind of Tamagotchi like of thing that you can use on mobile and on the web.
Okay.
And they have some potential in certain areas that we thought was interesting. And they're growing pretty rapidly, so we thought that you could maybe help them to get their community more stable.
Okay. And the Web of Trust is?
It's a really nice plugin for Firefox or Explorer that allows you to be sure that, can you trust this website? When you go to the website and they ask you for your information, do you want to know, will I be spammed if I give my credit card, will they misuse it? Mm-hmm. And it based everything on customer or user feedback. So if assuming that somebody has gone on a website and got ripped off, it allows you to tell everybody else immediately that, hey, you shouldn't trust this. Mm-hmm. It also tells about child safety, so that if you have a install it, you can have the child to be kept away from sites that other people have rated with adult context and things like that. So I think it's a really useful tool for keeping the web more secure. It's also really, really practical for anybody doing web shopping, mm-hmm. or want to go to play online games and want to know that, can I really trust this site?
Is that available now? Is it?
It's available now. Has been available a long time. They have millions of users. Mm-hmm. So it's you just go to the Firefox and choose the plugins and search for what Web of Trust, and use it myself and recommend everybody to use it. It's just such a great tool.
Okay. Well, fantastic. Anything else we should discover here or discuss here?
No, I think that's sums it up quite nicely.
Great. Well, thanks again. Freelock Computing. Yeah. So, what'd you think?
Pretty cool. Man, he's really doing a lot.
Yeah, he's got a lot of irons in the fire, that's for sure.
Yeah, I wonder how much he actually works during the week? I mean, like, how many hours a day does he dedicate to this?
He didn't say exactly, but he's a real advocate for balance, for work-life balance.
Sure.
So in the hacking business model, which we'll put some links up on the website with this episode that can point you to those, along with an article that I wrote, kind of responding to that.
That kind of started this whole relationship, right? I mean,
yeah, that's a big part of where our discussion sparked off. Work-life balance. Yeah, he's very big on that. He has a section in there where he says, and his, that no employee will have more than 37 hours of work a week.
Right.
And of course that's Europe that he's coming from. He's very much an advocate for rest and recovery as being crucial for creative. You can only sit behind the computer so long before your productivity really goes down. And so if you're working all the time, and then inevitably you're not going to be producing as efficiently as if you put it in a certain amount of time.
Yeah. Easier said than done, but I mean, at the same time, there's something to be said about just recognizing that fact. I think a lot of people just subscribe to the go, go, go and get as much as you can done while awake, you know. And
you know, before I started my business, I'd rarely work overtime, but definitely not for extended periods. And I almost always, when I worked at actual jobs, I'd tend to do temp jobs or different things. I'd negotiate right up front. A 4-day or 4.5-day work week, and leave for the weekend and be out doing outdoor stuff and taking trips and getting fresh air, and that was absolutely crucial for me at the time. Now I'm so invested in building the company and everything that I'm doing here that I find I have more energy for it. And I just shift gears. At the weekends, I do a little bit of coding.
Right.
During the week, I'm running the business. Sure. So I don't know that it's work-life balance, but at least it's different activities that I'm doing that can give me some rest in there. So you had mentioned perhaps clarifying the GPL.
Yeah, the GPL. I don't think a lot of people understand that. And I'm not sure I always understand it 100% myself. So it's probably worth going over just so it's somewhat solidified for everybody who's listening.
Well, the GPL is kind of the original free software license. It was written originally by Richard Stallman. It's on its third version right now, and most recently it was revised by Eben Moglen as the main person kind of behind the version 3 draft, with a lot of input from the community. Version 2 is the main one that's been around, and it's basically the one that's behind the idea of copyleft. It was the first license that basically said, we are going to take the copyright law and use it to, instead of taking away your rights as a user, as the recipient of the software, we're going to use the license to protect your rights as the user.
and make sure that that the producer isn't taking those away. And by providing that guarantee, you are also guaranteeing that other people can change and modify it and improve it without adding all the friction of license fees.
So when people talk about copyleft and GPL, is that kind of one and the same thing?
Copyleft, I think, is one of the principles behind the GPL. And it's basically saying that there's an inherent expectation that any modifications you make, you'll release to the public.
Uh-huh.
The interesting thing about that is the GPL doesn't say you have to release it to the public. The GPL only says you have to release it to anybody you distribute the source code to.
Uh-huh.
So you are actually allowed to sell GPL software, but the catch that prevents people from doing that is anybody you sell it to could go ahead and give it away.
Huh. Interesting.
So the BSD licenses is built on... So GPL stands for the GNU General Public License. And you can read all about it at the Free Software Foundation, fsf.org. BSD is one of the early Unix variations. It actually predates Linux by quite a bit of time. It stands for the Berkeley System Distribution. And it came out of some of the Unix wars of the 80s. So it is actually free software as well, but it doesn't have any copyleft type of provision in it. Mm. You are free to use BSD code for any purpose whatsoever without ever giving anything back. So we probably should wrap it up. It's definitely been a good episode.
It definitely has been a good episode.
Some more here. We have a few upcoming events and appearances to start talking about. We probably won't get this podcast published before my guest appearance on the Linux Action Show. But if you haven't already heard that show, go over to jupiterbroadcasting.net and download the
.com, April. Isn't it?
Is it .com?
I think it's jupiterbroadcasting.com.
Okay, you may be right. One of those two. And check out my podcast. I did awesome 4 days from now. So hopefully that's true. Brian, I'm sure, will be the judge of that.
Well, see, the trick is you got to do your guest spot on Beer is Tasty first. And then do the Linux Action Show, and you'll just fly through with flying colors.
All right. I am supposed to bring the beer, so signed up for that. If you have any good suggestions.
Black vodka.
Hey, you know, yeah, actually, that's something to bring. That's
so if the Linux Action Show does not happen, you know who to blame now.
So... We should definitely make sure to get this out before then. The day after we record our next podcast, there is going to be a dojo.beer in Seattle at Dad Watson's. That is Thursday.
Is it April 16th?
Thursday, April 16th, 5 o'clock at Dad Watson's.
In Fremont.
In Fremont, the center of the universe. And we didn't even talk about Drupal, did we?
We didn't even mention it once.
Well, now we have.
There we did. Drupal.
And the other thing to get on your calendars, if you're in the Northwest, and even if you're not, and you can spring for a plane ticket, is Linux Fest Northwest is coming to Bellingham. And that's the weekend of April 25th and 26th. It's free for all comers. You obviously need to find your own hotel room. And last I heard, there were spaces at the actual hotel that they're recommending. There's quite a few hotels there, so it's pretty easy to find a bed if you don't get into the one they're recommending. But definitely get there, you know, sign up early and get there quickly, and I'll be talking there. Monty is also coming to Bellingham to speak there, as we already mentioned, and I'm sure it'll be a great show. I've been 3 years now, 2 or 3 years, and always had a great time.
Cool. It'll be my first, I think, so looking forward to it.
Great. And on that note, we will talk with you all again in 2 weeks.
Sounds good. Computing.
Computing.